Today's Daily DVR is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Now, Cufflinks.com has something awesome happening today, and actually it's happening pretty much this whole week. They're doing something that benefits people and really helps them out. It's called Buy One, Give One Tie, 30% off all ties. Use code TIE30. And for every tie that you buy, Cufflinks.com is going to give a tie to a career center to someone that needs it for a job interview or for their job. And I just think this is fantastic. So go over to Cufflinks.com, or you can use ours, Cufflinks.com/DVR, and use code TIE30. And if you buy a tie, Cufflinks.com is going to donate a tie to a local career center to help somebody out that needs it. Thanks, Cufflinks. On to the show. Today is Monday, March 11th, 2019, and this is Daily DVR. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. This is Axel, and you're listening to Daily DVR. Go to DVRpodcast.com. Check us out. Join our Facebook group. Go to Twitter. All that kind of junk. You know the routine. Well, listen, I'm back. It's Monday, and I don't know if I finished my rewatch of season two yet, because I'm recording this on Saturday at 3:48 p.m., and I just finished episode five of season two, so I'm going to just jump right in, talk Game of Thrones, baby. Let's do it. Season two, the War of the Five Kings is on. There's intrigue. There's a battle. Stuff is happening. It's fun. I'm enjoying it. And then there's Danny, and nothing's happening. Man, I really forgot about this. When I think about the fact that she is, spoiler alert, probably going to reach Westeros proper, legitimately, I mean, I know she has, but for real, for the, like, the first time here in, this final season, like, kind of actually, like, really be there, is, just kind of crazy. And it just makes me think about having to watch all of that. I'm being honest. The Westeros stuff, I love it. I can't wait to see the Hound and Arya. I mean, even Sansa and Theon and all that, I'm interested in rewatching that. I mean, there's so much I want to see. North of the Wall, of course, that's my jam. But yeah, the Dany stuff, I just think about the ways that the book was changed that I know about, as having not really read all the books, but knowing a fair amount of this history at this point and of the books and what they cut, which is a lot of stuff. They cut a lot of stuff. Just why, I guess maybe if they had more of a faith in what was coming, they would have been able to make Dany's journey a little bit more interesting. Like, I think, like, wouldn't it have been cool if she went to, like, Valyria or, like, just did something, like, you know, the warlocks appear in this episode, episode five, you know? And it's like, wow, that would have been cool, but I know it's really not going to be that cool, you know? And then I think about the rest of the journey, and of course there's learning there, and we all talk about it, and I'm not saying I don't like the character and all the people and the Unsullied, that part, you know, there's a lot of good there, right? Dario, there's a lot of good to come. But when I think about the kind of balance, it's just not there. And I think that's obvious, right? It's just not there at all. So it could have been much more interesting. And this beginning five episodes is just almost ridiculous. I mean, it's seriously almost ridiculous. And I don't mean to start complaining because I love this season so far, but I'm just saying it's only because, you know, you love something so much. But the desert stuff and, you know, send the horses to Four Winds, you know, like, it's just, I don't know. And then they're just it's really, and they've just gotten to Karth, and I like what I'm seeing of her personality, and I think I'm understanding Dany's character better through this viewing, as I'm understanding a lot of stuff better through this viewing, but it's just not great. And the fact that you have such an exclamation point with the end of season one in the dragons, right? Oh my gosh, she's got dragons. Wow. She's out of the fire. Oh my God. Wow. What's going to happen? Like, imagine, and I, you know, go back, you rewatch season one, right? For season two. Oh, wow. What's Dany going to do? She does literally almost nothing until episode five. And then it's kind of interesting. The card stuff I actually like. I mean, I think they could have obviously done more with it and had it be, there is a, it's like everything she does up to a certain point is a parable. And I understand that. And I can appreciate that. But it wasn't easy to watch the first time or really that fun or interesting. And it's not this time. I understand what they were going for, and achievement not unlocked. That achievement is locked. Okay. Now it's becoming unlocked. All right. Maybe. But back in the day there, no. So let's get on to some other stuff. I am still continuing as I was in season one to reevaluate Rob, his strategy, his character, and also in opposition to John, because there was an obvious, red herring here the whole time. And that red herring is Rob. The thing is, I never believed it because I always believed that Jon Snow was the star of this show. And I always figured that Rob was going to die. I'm not kidding. I mean, I think you can go back and listen to the episodes. I don't feel like I had a big investment in Rob. I'm not saying I predicted the Red Wedding. I didn't. But I always felt that Jon Snow was going to be the guy. So, for instance, when the stuff about Rob being a superhero that rides a direwolf, and that this fact is known throughout Westeros, right? And that he's becoming legendary. And even in this episode, when Tywin, and this begins the fantastic union of Tywin and Arya, which is perhaps maybe my favorite couple in all of Game of Thrones. I got to tell you, as soon as they were back together, he rode in on that horse when they're about to have the rat go through someone's chest. I can't remember who it was at the time. But then I was like, wow, I remember this now. And they're so great together. It's like, you know what it's kind of like? It's like Harold and Maude. I feel like Tywin and Arya are like Harold and Maude. And they just, they fit together. And I, you know, all I can say is that it's in another life, right? In another life, if they were the same age, they could have been a power couple, you know, like a perfect power couple. And now that Arya is who she is, it's so interesting to see how much she learned from Tywin. And if anything, the true daughter of Tywin is not Cersei, which they are fond of pronouncing her name like that earlier in the episodes. It is Arya, because she is somehow has that just coldness about her and that stillness, and that this where she like, look, anyone can die. You know, he said, do you think Robb Stark is invincible? Do you believe these stories? No, anyone can die. That's an awesome line right there. And they just look each other in the eye. And I'm like, and then Tywin is kind of like, he's the one who gets taken back. And then they cut back to Arya and she's still looking at him the exact same way. You know, it's like a Key and Peele sketch or something. It was really good. Their relationship together is fantastic. But I never bought the Robb Stark stuff. I just wasn't into him. And I didn't know that he was going to die. I had no idea. I just felt like Jon Snow had to, look, spoiler alert on every fucking thing that's ever made, but it's always the not the prince guy. You know what I mean? Like, this is going back, you know, this is like Breakfast Club time or something. Okay. That's the deal. And I just didn't buy Rob, but now I'm buying it, and I'm seeing the work that they put in to building it, repeating that legend, the pride that Arya has when she's talking to Tywin about it. It's repeated in several different scenes. I remember when the origin of this is that scene with the two Lannister soldiers, and they're doing their little joke, and then the guy farts, right? Or they're scared, and then the guy does his little joke and farts. And then, you know, out comes a direwolf. And that legend, upon my first viewing, it just kind of glossed over me. But now I'm seeing it, and I'm kind of liking Rob. But the thing about Rob is the relationship with Catelyn and what she does to undermine him as his mother, but the connection and the link to that 17 years ago, which, by the way, they've stopped saying now. That's something that I want to address, is that in these first five episodes with this war and with the events now fully underway, both with Dany and in Westeros, they have abandoned continually reminding us of Robert's rebellion. They mention it, but it's not as ever present because the events are taking place now. And I thought that was really interesting. And I also want to mention that I thought that they are doing a fantastic job, and this is something that I often pined for. And perhaps I was, again, not always noticing everything, but I think they do a fairly good job, especially in episodes 3 and 4 of season 2, of establishing how devastating this war is to the regular people. And the stuff that happens at Harrenhal, the stuff that we see on different people's journeys throughout Westeros as we check in this last episode, where Tyrion is kind of like, the king is a loss. And, you know, that guy, you know, you begin to see the advent of these soapbox guys like yelling out. Now it's political here, but later it will become religious, right? Because it gets so desperate that the people need the answer, which is religion, right? They need to turn to that. And it's really interesting. It's really interesting the way that the first season was so firmly rooted in the past, and then this season is really very much so rooted in the now. It's as though events kind of like as a wave took everyone's feet out from under them. You know, they were just standing still, and then the whoosh, came and all of a sudden they had to, whoop, now we got to deal with now. And it's very interesting. Joffrey, the rapidity at which Joffrey becomes the worst person ever and just total, you know, Caligula without the, I guess, more sexual freedom. I guess when Caligula was a little bit, I don't think that's really proper to describe Caligula and Joffrey together. Caligula is a little bit more, indulgence there. You know, Joffrey is more like perhaps a present day, some people we have problems with. But that dude it just becomes him. And I don't know. I heard, I guess, didn't the actor kind of step away from acting? And I don't, I mean, if this is the only thing he ever does, I don't know. I would say good on you, homie, because man, it's never not believable. He is never not Joffrey, and he does not get enough credit. And it's an actually absolutely astounding performance. And the more I think about it, the more I would get angry that he didn't win Emmys and be like, I mean, that is really, he pulled it off, because Joffrey could have been such a ham-bone, stupid villain. And I don't think he is at all. I think he is scary. I think he's intimidating. The way he treats Sansa, you know, I again have to say that maybe it's because because I've been a father longer now, that it's harder for me to cut off myself from the teenage characters. And that's what it was about, I think, Sansa and Jon too in the first couple seasons, even Theon. Arya's a little bit different because she is so obviously kind of going down the dark road. That's a little bit easier. You know, the kid serial killer thing, whatever. That's a little bit kind of, I guess, easier to get into. I don't know. Maybe that says something about myself. But I find that now I'm really looking at them. And Theon, what he has put through with what he went through with his father, and then the kind of fooling around with his sister on the horseback and the way she just didn't give a shit about it. And he is kind of devastated. And just, you know, Theon is really kind of he's kind of a loser, you know? And I think that he just, you know, he felt he didn't have his family. He's there with the Starks. And even though they treated him well, I wonder, I don't know, like, if he had ever went to Ned and been like, hey, Ned, I'm older, like, at an earlier point, like, at 14. I just think, like, if I was Theon, like, when I was, like, 12 or 13, I would have went to Ned and been like, look, it is now becoming disadvantageous for you to have me here. Let me go back. Let me, let my father accept me. Let me become the new, whatever, king of, you know, whoever... I was forgetting the names of these places. Let me become the, would he be a king of the Iron Islands? Does it, right? Is it called the king? I don't remember if they call themselves the king or whatever, but, and then I will be, kind of more pledged to you, right? And to Westeros. And we'll have a good relationship. But it's like Theon was just kind of a loser. And what happens to him next is super sad. And I guess I'm just having a little bit more of a moment here. I'm in my feelings on these kids. And the Sansa stuff is just ridiculous. I guess I had forgotten some of this. Or like I said, the character, I don't know, I'm just seeing her in a new light. And I don't know if I'm becoming like this huge Sansa fan or whatever, but because I know the internet has them. But I'm just saying, for me, wow. Like, I think the age thing is something too that I'm realizing how much younger, because they did play a bit older, right? Like, weren't they all like 4 or 5 years older in real life? I personally have a hard time telling the difference between someone that's like 18 and like 25 sometimes, you know, now that I'm my age. I probably did back then too. I think all people do. It's hard to tell sometimes. It's individual. Some people look, you know, old, young. I mean, you just can't, I don't think that it can be expected of you. And for some reason, they just all struck me as old except for Bran, you know, and of course, Rickon. Freaking smashing the peanuts while people are trying to talk or whatever he was doing. Anyway, what Joffrey does to Sansa is disgusting, and right off the bat, showing her Ned's head on the pike, that was terrible. So I'm just really feeling that more this time, but I'm feeling the Danny stuff way less. This is like super boring so far. Now maybe we'll get into Karth, but I'm interested to see as it goes forth. Like, I was really taken by some of this stuff, like especially when they first get to Harrenhal and the lady's like, "I've been here for months. My sister died yesterday, my son today." And then she just like looks off into the distance. And I was kind of, I don't know, I was just really putting myself there. And I thought it was pretty good. Those little moments, maybe sometimes that's what, too, as a podcaster, when you watch something, you're looking for the big things that you have to at least think about and mention. And you're kind of ruminating about the larger things and the undercurrent stuff, which fills in the gaps, you know, the pauses in between can kind of be lost. And oftentimes that's the supporting material. That's really the stuff, right? That's the bones of it. And I'm really seeing it this time and I'm really enjoying it. Let me see what else I was doing. I've been sending myself some notes. Let's see what I got. Yeah, the degradation of society under Joffrey. I talked about this. Oh, okay. Now. All right. So this is episode 2 with the White Walker at the end when it takes the baby and then Craster knocks Jon on the head because he sees him peeking. In the books, I know that isn't the White Walker's voice. They do speak a little and it's supposed to sound like ice cracking or glass cracking. And that is completely the sound you hear when Jon is getting the baby. And I was under the impression, I forgot that this even happened because I remember, and I've always said that I think that the White Walker should talk. There's no reason why they shouldn't talk. It would be, they were human. We've seen how they were created already. We know that they're human beings imbued with some sort of children of the forest magic, right? So why wouldn't they be able to speak or have a different language? Or it's obvious that they're super intelligent and they can communicate as well as, you know, do tactical plans and, I don't know, sense time traveling people. You know, it's not like they're not monsters. That's why we like this show. We like this show exactly for that reason. And so this made me happy because I remember reading that Dan and Dave said, well, they're never going to talk or whatever, right? Well, I said, but they did, because that is what it was supposed to sound like. And if you go back to the end of episode 2 and you hear what John is hearing, it sounds, it's like, and then it's like ice and glass, like cracking and crackling. So maybe in the final season, we'll hear him talk, because I want to see, do they live really under the ice? That was really cool to me, because this whole thing with Craster obsesses me. This is one of the things that I think about the most when I think about Game of Thrones. Besides the fact that my ultimate theory is that little Sam will become somehow a new king or leader of Westeros, because you go from child of incest, you know, that should have been given, should be a White Walker, but yet becomes the leader of men, right? It's like that kind of going back to the old, you know, Bran Stark, the Stark, the Night's Watch, you know, with the woman and all that kind of stuff, all those myths and legends and lores, which is all, I was talking about A. Hustler. I was talking to A. Hustler about this and how so much of that is wrong and different. And we were talking about the prequel and getting excited, but anyway, Theon stuff. Yeah. He's just really dumb, Theon, you know, he's like a loser. He's not really that smart. And he just gets himself into, and he's a sad dude too. He's been through a lot, of poor kid. Back to where I began with Rob and Catelyn. She just makes mistake after mistake, and Rob should have at some point, it's not about the fact that she's even his mom. It's that even if it was like, say, for some reason, Ned was incapacitated. Okay, I'll put it to you this way. Say it was reversed and Catelyn had been kidnapped, but Ned was incapacitated and Rob had to really do things. Would he be trying to send him places? I just don't know. Is that normal behavior in Westeros? Like, would you use those alliances like that? Like, even going back to Walder Frey and all that, I just feel that Rob teeters back and forth. But in general, he seems to have made some good decisions with those first couple battles. But then it's like he gives Tywin an opportunity to think. And that's where we are now. That's where I am now at the season, is that Rob has had these three wins, right? He's got Jaime, right? But the death of Renly, and with Catelyn being there, is sending a kind of reverberations and pause to what's happening. And this pause is giving Tywin an opportunity where, because, you know, they're at that table at Harrenhal and he says, "Don't serve the wine. It's water now. We've got plans to make." And, you know, and he's going to figure it out. And what plans does he make? Well, we're going to eventually see that those plans are going to come to fruition with the Red Wedding. But there's other things that happen in the meantime. And I think that this is kind of, Rob got off to a great start. He's kind of stumbling here. And it seems the more he relies on the past, his mom, those relationships, the worse he is. And the more that he moves forward in what he believes in and does what he thinks is right, it's better. So it's kind of reverse of how I saw Rob the first time around, because I just thought he was dumb and just full of a lot of bravado. And he still is, but he has to be. They're at war. I mean, you know, he's not me. He's not sitting home watching a freaking TV show, you know? Again, I have to go back to that scene with the White Walker. I really like that. And they didn't show it. And I wonder, did they not show it because they had showed it in the first episode and it really wasn't that great looking? You know, remember how it changed? And you got to forgive that. But I wonder about that. Episode 3, the Brienne intro. This is when Brienne is introed, season 2, episode 3. She fights in the battle and she earns the honor of being Renly's on his King's Guard. And this is a little weird, I found, because not a little weird, but it is a proper introduction to Brienne, because she gets this great honor. And then the way she celebrates is just by being like awkwardly annoying to Catelyn. You know, and like being so proper about everything. Like, she can't even kind of bask in it. And even Catelyn's trying to congratulate her in a sense and kind of be, and she's like, "My lady, it's blah, blah, blah," you know? And it's just interesting the way she's so uptight. And then you see kind of the journey she goes on. But what a fantastic character and her introduction. And there's so many, of course, that's another thing about this season that brings us back to, wow, they're introducing all these new people, and they really are. But a lot of them were around, but we're just seeing more of them. But they are introducing new characters, you know? And just, you know, the Bronn and Tyrion stuff is fantastic. Their relationship grows the way they just kind of throw it back to each other, and they just know what to do. They know the next step. That's some fantastic stuff that I'm really enjoying. Tyrion also, this again, I think I said this last time, Tyrion, this is really where he kind of really shines, you know? This is where he really shines. And he really becomes that character. Okay. Another thing I want to mention, starting really in episode 4, we see the beginnings of the murder of Joffrey, the purple wedding, right? Both the red wedding and the purple wedding have their kind of origin within the same 2 to 3 episodes, though they play out at different times. And seeing the relationship between Littlefinger and Margaery over 2 or 3 successive scenes that happen over the course of 2 episodes, when Littlefinger is visiting the camp and also presents Ned's remains to Catelyn, is really interesting. Up until their final encounter, I believe their third, in which, you know, he says, you have eyes to be a queen. And she says, I have eyes to be the queen. Or the queen. That or the. And he's like, uh-huh, my lady. I'm Littlefinger. Well, you know what, man, Garcetti, he's come a long way. But Littlefinger is, oh man, he's awesome in this. And now you see it. It's patently there. And then when we meet the Queen of Thorns, it's, you know, things will progress. And we see what happens here. And it's just really interesting. You know, it's really interesting. And I like it. And it makes me, the Dany stuff makes me feel, not good. This makes me feel, all right, plan, good. And in general, I'm so enjoying this. I'm going to watch the next 5 episodes. Let's see, when I finish them, I might add to this, and I'll release it earlier than I thought. But I'm really just enjoying it. And what a fan. And as far as the production goes, I had said online, I was trying to figure out, there is definitely a difference in the look of the show. Now, I know that they shot this show, a little production stuff, with a camera called an Arri Alexa for the first couple of seasons. Then they started branching out. And for a while, a lot of people were using that camera. It's generally, I believe, to be kind of the same crew, but my man Fit and Trim there on the Twitter, Bubba, said that they changed their special effects or VFX company. And I'm not sure what they do. I'm not sure if that, how much of post-production that includes. But one thing I think I'm seeing is that there's less close-ups in this season. And maybe that's something that I noticed. First, I thought that the contrast was different. Maybe it was a location change that had also been suggested. But I think that it may just be that they were using more mid shots. And in the first season, they were using more close-ups. Because when I do see the texture on people's skin, it does seem as real as before, but I'm noticing less shots like that. So maybe they were using a more standard close-up shot, reverse shot style of editing or shooting, because who knows how they shoot, you know, shoot the mid, the wide, and a couple close-ups, but I'm not sure. There are way more wide shots in this season. Way more. Not that there weren't a lot in the first season, but I feel like there's way more in this season. And I feel like there are more shots where there are multiple characters on the screen. Okay, not just like, oh, 2-shot, 3-shot, but where there are people amongst crowds of other people. I don't know. It's definitely looks a little bit different. It could have been, there's no way, unless you talk to the people, that you could really figure it out. Who knows? It could be, you know, I mean, it could be that HBO was broadcasting it differently. Oh, I did find out that they actually switched from tape, from HD tape to hard drives in the first to second season. though they use the same camera. That's kind of interesting. Could that have a, could that make a difference on the look? It actually could. It actually could. But I don't think it would make a difference that I would notice. And I just think that it may be a consequence of each season may have its own look because they're all the equipment and all the timing and everything is happening at the same time. And that is something that I find as a person who has worked in film or video and TV is something that people don't consider. Is sometimes when you have the same cameras and lenses and you're using them, a look develops, you know? And then when you're on a different show, a different job, even if it's the same equipment, really, it can kind of look different. I don't know what it is. It's just because honestly, there's so many variables when it comes to video that happens. And that's something that I think I'm noticing in this season. And that's why I'm interested in seeing when I get to the third season and really keep looking. Am I seeing that or no? Maybe is there a difference again? Well, we'll see. Anyway, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch episode 6. And maybe I'll do another one of these and put them together. And we'll see from there. So I won't give you a whole good goodbye. I'll just say until the next segment. All right. I hope you're enjoying my little romp through season 2. And I just do want to bring you up to speed again on using code TIE30 at cufflinks.com/DVR. Cufflinks will donate a tie to local career centers for every tie that you buy. So use code TIE30 to get 30% off the tie and Cufflinks will donate it to a career center. I just think this is a fantastic thing to do. A lot of what I've done through my life has been helping people. I spent a lot of years working at a public access station, doing a lot of free work, helping people out and helping people achieve their dreams. And you know what? You'd be surprised at how many people can't get a job or even go on an interview because they can't even afford the clothes to wear. It's hard to get there, you know? And I just love that Cufflinks is thinking about that and taking the opportunity to do that. So go over to cufflinks.com and use code TIE30 today to get 30% off your tie. Cufflinks.com/DVR TIE30. What a great program. Cufflinks.com. Now back to the second part of my run through of season 2 of Game of Thrones. So I finished the second 5 episodes of season 2 here of the Game of the Thrones. And man, once again, I'm really enjoying this rewatch. I'm learning things. I'm getting into characters in ways that I didn't before. Certain people I'm noticing, I know things are going to happen, but I'm not doing that too much. With Shay, I have to say there was a marked change. I thought as soon as Tywin got back to King's Landing, and in episode 10, when she wakes kind of Tyrion up after Blackwater, I just noticed something different. And I wonder, did we ever really find out, was Bronn involved in this from the beginning? Like, did Tywin tell him to bring this whore to my son and then track it from there? Or was it just when he returned back to King's Landing, is that when he became involved with Shay? And I'm liking her a lot more too. Blackwater, wow. I mean, I know I've got some episodes to talk about here, but, you know, this episode is much funnier than I remember. There was just so much humor in it, whether it was Cersei, Tyrion, the Hound, even the way Joffrey's reactions were. There's a lot of fun stuff in this episode that I have to admit that I think that this episode was my least favorite of the marquee episodes. And it may, I mean, Hard Home for me is always going to be the greatest thing that they've done yet as far as the battles go, and I love it. And also, I must admit, guys and gals, I'm not really into this medieval kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was kind of cool the way they took apart the boat and made it into a battering ram. And I know we're going to cover this for a director series, whether it's hopefully I get Mike to do it, but we're going to do it at some point. We'll continue that series. And I was thinking about this and I took some notes for that. Actually, it was a good thing to watch it. And that stuff was interesting to me, you know, but I'm just, the castle siege thing is not super exciting to me. And so I kind of, this battle, I don't really care so much about the mechanics of battles and like strategy and stuff. That's just not super interesting to me in that way. I mean, I guess I like the politics more and I like the actual human stories than that kind of big strategy. But this was fun. I let myself into it. I said, hey, you know what? Just watch this thing and have fun watching it. And I was able to. I had a great time watching it. And I think in many ways, sorry about that. I have to adjust my mic live. There you go. In many ways, I got more into it this time than I ever have before. You know, just the whole strategy of sending the boat out. Cersei wanted to launch it, right? So Tyrion had that idea. The way they're just kind of waiting and watching. And the explosion, I absolutely loved it. I mean, I just thought the effects were great. The little cut-ins. And what a vicious battle this is. And so many just... I love the way when they do the battles, they always make sure to show you how like more than half the people die by accident or ineptitude. Like there's one shot where a guy, the wildfire's exploding and they're on a boat that isn't touched by it, but he just runs into the side of the boat, like one of the masts or one of the hanging, bags of sand or whatever they use when sailing, and he just gets slammed back and like his head gets, you just see it go the wrong way. And there's just so many little parts like that, you know, like someone accidentally touching something or reaching a certain way and their just arm gets chopped off. It's so violent, and it just reminds me of the visceral nature of this show. I have to be reminded of it. We talk about it and we talk about the dragons and Danny and the big theater, but this show is very violent. And I mean, one of the things I do want to pay attention to is see, does that decrease as time goes on? Because to me, there was an upturn in season two of nudity and violence. And of course, there's a war happening. So of course, there's going to be. But one of the things that I also noticed, just like Brienne, Jaime, Jon, Rob, so many people, so many of our heroes, right? Jaime, you know, killing people and taking other people's lives, just like the way Brienne takes out those Stark men. They were going to take Jaime from her anyway, right? Like she had to do what she had to do in that situation, and it's a war. I'm not trying to justify it in a way. I'm just saying it just goes to show you there's been so many times when the real world has interceded into Game of Thrones, but it's just not our world, you know? It's such a different world, and when you really just watch it at its face, you see that. And you see it similar to one thing I was thinking about was when I was talking to you all about how I felt that there was a visual difference. You know, I think I've come to the conclusion that it's just certain little changes here. But I also think in Dany's case, when she got to Carth, they put makeup on her. And I just think that that's, and I think it's kind of part of the show too. She was in the desert, and I think that she just wears kind of makeup from now. They had makeups in Westeros, right? I think that's just, maybe it's something I noticed with Dany just because I was just in season one. there were so many close-ups of her face and her skin. It was really, maybe it was something that they highlighted. You know, they'll sit around and have meetings, and this is a smart thing to do. And it's, I mean, all, you know, this is art. You talk about it, and you just, you know, we really got a, that her skin this season that's meaningful because of the fire and because of the, right, the nature of that. So maybe I was just picking up on that and kind of transmogrifying that onto everything else and blowing it up, you know? But there is a bit of a change here. But I do feel that in keeping season one and season two are similar enough in style that I don't see a big change yet. And I really want to try to track when it happens, because I don't know whether it's slow or what really was it kind of 5-6, you know, going there. We'll see. But anyway, I'm having so much fun with it. And I really, Blackwater just took me. And this stuff with Cersei, for instance, I'm laughing to myself. When Cersei says, you have to marry the king, you know, you'll have to do what the king bids you and all that. And he, and then Sansa does one of her lines, you know, Cersei's getting drunk and Sansa says something like, but you had King Robert. And, you know, at, like the kid, you know, like Sansa's trying to say, wouldn't speak bad of the king, you know, like, oh gosh, she would never do that. I'd never speak bad. And she tries so hard during the whole, this, I mean, it's just, gosh, the Sansa stuff is heartbreaking. But anyway, Cersei jokes and she goes, and you have Joffrey. Good luck with that. Or she just says, enjoy or something. I can't remember. She is, what an actress. Lena Headey, man, I loved her on Sarah Connor Chronicles. I loved that show. And it's an oft-forgotten sci-fi show that I hope as time goes on, it comes back. I don't even know if it's streaming anywhere right now. I should rewatch it. But it was so good. And I know the whole Terminator franchise is kind of a joke at this point, as so many of these franchises. It's like, do you really know the continuity of the term? If you know the continuity of the Terminator franchise, you're either like a super fan, more power to you, or I don't know how you know. Because I can't remember what happened with the Christian Bale one. And aren't they coming out with another one now? But it's not supposed to. In the Emilia Clarke one. Was the Emilia Clarke and the Christian Bale, was that the same? I can't remember. Anyway. Long story short. What an actress. And what a performance. My queen. Your queen, Cersei. About three seasons in a row on podcast Littlefell, the Small Council podcast, Winterfell here, I had said, Cersei's going to die. Cersei's going to... Now, I said, and I keep to it, I hope she's the only one standing at the end. I love Cersei. I hate her. She disgusts me. She enraptures me. I'm taken with her. I don't know. It's, she's just so powerful and awesome, but yet despicable. And it's all due to the great actress, because she imbues something just with the, just like a raise of her lip or eyebrow. And Lena Headey, like she knows what she can do with her face. Like she keeps it in a different, like if you watch her in other things, if you watch Sarah Connor Chronicles, you watch this show, her resting face is different as Cersei, right? She embodies the character. It's really amazing. And I'm just taken with her. And this season is really like her coming out, you know, and there's certain, you see that there's certain acts of rising to power and she's getting to a certain point and she keeps on getting knocked back because she really isn't in charge. And then the final knockback, which then she takes out on Tyrion too, right, is when Daddy comes home. And she's kind of knocked back again and even saved by him. And I just have to say that it is kind of funny when Tywin enters like bloodied and everyone, the doors are thrown open in the throne room. And he's like, the battle is over and we have won. And I'm pausing awkwardly on purpose because it's just kind of, weird, you know, like, but the poison slips from her hand. And it's funny to remember that that, you know, this, that's Tommen, and the speech she gives him is kind of like, you have to give up. And then what does he end up doing? Killing himself, right? Like, there's such a direct line between those two scenes. It's almost like the idea was implanted in him at some point that it's okay. It's okay to give up, you know? Just insane. But the Tywin line is probably one of his weakest. I mean, I don't know who could have delivered that. And even the way it was shot was just, it just didn't work for me, you know? I would have rather they cut halfway through his line or something. You know, you go back to Cersei. Maybe they didn't. I don't remember. But that, what an episode, you know, what an episode. And you think the battle's over, and then more of Stannis' men appear, and then you think the battle's over, and then here comes Tywin. So it really was a lot of fun. And I didn't remember it that way. I remembered it as kind of a slog, and I've seen it like 10 times. But for some reason, I'm just enjoying this rewatch. Maybe I'm just really positive coming into the final season, just like appreciating it, you know. But again, the comedy in it is great. And when the Hound gives up, and he, and you know, Tyrion's like, "Get what the? What do you want me to get you some tea and crimpets?" And then he's just like, "Fuck the king, fuck you, fuck this war." He's like, "The whole lake's on fire." It's, I just thought it was great, you know, to see, I should say. He's just fantastic. And that's so many great characters this season that we get. And there's, I just have to say, it's crazy because there's a war, but there's a certain lightness about a lot of the characters that are coming into fruition this season. Whether it's even like Jaime having kind of more, being just a little bit more interplay with words, and then the Jaime and Brienne stuff, the Hound, even Joffrey and his evilness and depravity, there's a certain whimsical nature to it all, you know? And it's just like, what, oh, you know, what could happen? You know, he takes such delight in things, but it's sick. It's just strange. When I thought back on this season, I said, it's actually kind of lighter and more fun than it was the first season. Because, like, you know, Robert and Ned were all like old. I mean, they're not, they weren't really that old, but I guess, you know, in this world at that time. But they were just, they, everything was about the past, and they really flipped it. And this season became so much more about the future. You know, there were also just a lot of kind of mirror moments I see with, you know, Theon kind of Theon's journey here. And then what happens to him later, there's just so much action and reaction. I loved, of course, okay, this is another thing I thought of while watching this. Why am I enjoying so much? I'm enjoying so much the Jaqen H'ghar and Arya stuff and all the stuff at Harrenhal. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Why was the stuff with Arya and Jaqen H'ghar so boring later? Why was it so boring? You know? And I think the reason why was because it was missing so much of the fun. And he was so much fun. And every time he spoke to her, it was a rhyming wordplay of, and it wasn't always meaning. He was mean. He was kind of, wouldn't answer her. Don't forget that the way she gets their escape, guarantees their escape, is by naming him, right? And tricking him. And then how he then tricks her later, but there's just no humor in it. There's no lightness to it. And I think that that's something that maybe is a little bit missing. And I hope going into this season, when I want to watch for that is coming too, because this season was very funny. I found myself, I laughed out loud 5-6 times during Blackwater, just laughed out. I mean, I thought some of this stuff was hilarious, just even some of the physical stuff and, you know, just the reactions, like when the wildfire is burning all the boats, Joffrey's like salivating, like, and then Tyrion just kind of looks up at him and he's like, oh my God, you know? And Tyrion and Cersei, I think it was maybe it was the 10th episode, maybe it was the 7th, where they have a conversation and they're just like kind of talking about how crazy Joffrey is. And it was just a fun conversation. I mean, even though it ends, of course, with them threatening to kill each other, it was just a fun conversation. And there's this lightness and just sense of newness and openness and so much to tell right now. And I know there is so much to tell going into season 3, especially 4, 5, 6, right? It goes on. And there's a confidence, right? Knowing that they have the material that George has provided them with. And I just want to see where that goes. I'm having a blast doing this rewatch. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to it. Just trying to hit some points here and there. And as we start thinking again, specifically about the TV show and what journey it's been on. And the Dany stuff, I'll end with that. Boring. I can't lie. I mean, when I think I didn't do a scene add up, which I, on Brett's suggestion, I am going to do that again this season, where I can look back at where they cut to and how many, what scenes or what, just write out the scenes, short descriptions. And, I mean, look, they're in the desert. They go to Karth. They go to a party. The dragons are stolen. Oh, she kind of goes around asking everybody for boats. The dragons are stolen. She has a couple of heartfelt conversations with Jorah Friendzone. She goes and gets a dragon. She has her vision. She kills the warlock. She leaves. And when she leaves, and this is what I don't understand too. She locks, what's his name? Zoran Doth, right? Whatever his name was. Into the, was that guy's name? Into the what becomes his tomb, which was supposed to be his vault. And as she's locking him in the vault and her assistant there, who taught her about sex, which I didn't think was very fair, mind you, because she doesn't know that she was with him before. I mean, did she set the whole thing up? Maybe she did, but what was she supposed to do? You know, at least talk to her a little while, Khaleesi. This reminds me of why back then too, and I say it now, this just was silly. Like, I feel like Dan and Dave changed a lot of stuff from the books. And I don't know if they too were like, what do we do with Dany? How do the dragons grow? Blah, blah. It's like, I just figure it's just weak, you know, it's just weak. And it's not the worst thing ever. They didn't involve us in all these extra B plot scenes. It's kind of like they knew it wasn't that great, so they didn't give you too much. You know, it's not excessively boring or terrible. It's just after she has dragons, you thought something cool was going to happen. You know, that's why I say I think she should have gone in search of what the dragons were. And they could have given us some history. We could have met some interesting people. They could have plucked someone from here or there and put them in the story. You know, look, I'm all in favor of, even if something worked in the book and you can't do it in the TV show, change it. They obviously did so, they changed so much of this that it's just surprising to me because it's, like I said, it's not terrible. And the vision is awesome. And it makes you think so much about what we could see, you know? And I think in many ways it kind of foretells Dany's death. But, you know, it just wasn't that interesting. And Jorah Friendzone, ah, man, just make your move, dude. Make your move to Maxon. Anybody know that? Move. Maxon's got your ticket to ride and it's hot. That was an old Jersey, New York thing. Maybe that's across the country now. But just make your move, Jorah Friendzone. What are you doing, baby? You know what I'm saying? Either just say, look, Khaleesi, I'm in love with you. And then she goes, yo, Jorah, it ain't like that. And then he can move on. You know, but this like creepy from afar stuff, it ain't helping anybody, Jorah. And I love Jorah, you know, but that was a big part of this season too. I think he's, Khaleesi, I would do anything for you, Khaleesi. When I think of you, Khaleesi, when I saw you, I said to myself, that is a woman. Wait, he doesn't go that. He goes more like, that is a woman who has strength. No, I'm going up too high. Strength. Okay, I got to work on it. I think I have it in the middle range, though. I think I do a Khaleesi. I think that's pretty good. That was pretty good. I heard it in my headphones. That was pretty good. Yeah, just not good stuff. Yeah, just could have done better. I know there's going to be better parts, but then there's going to be where I'm looking forward to the Unsullied. But it's like, look, why couldn't you make a deal with the guy instead of locking him in the vault? If it was all nothing and that was the lesson, then isn't the real lesson, okay, is that you shouldn't have locked him in the vault. You should have put him in there, looked at him, made a deal, and then said, all right, come on, let's go. Because she could have somehow or put him in there and manipulated the politics of that. You know, it just didn't make sense, right? For a show that dives in on the politics and the scheming and the planning, it just did not make sense. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. It's just like, okay, we're going to steal stuff and then we're going to go buy, you know, the Unsullied, or we're going to buy ships or something. It's just such a short range plan. And if that's the point, that she's not ready to be Khaleesi or, you know, the queen yet, because that's how short her thinking is, well, okay, I guess I get it, but it's still kind of dumb. And you'd think Jorah would even say something, like at least say, Khaleesi, perhaps we could speak to him, you know, something like that. Maybe we could make a deal. I'm kind of obsessed with this now. I'll stop. Anyway, great season. I'm having fun doing this. Man, I finished last night and I was like, yo, I'm going to go, I can't watch episode one of season three because then I'm going to start talking about it. But nope. One last thing is the whole White Walkers thing at the end with Sam. Yeah, it was kind of, I don't know, I remembered it better. It was a little disappointing. I guess after, you know, you have Hard Home in your mind and everything, and it was just, I don't know. They were still working on the White Walkers. It was cool at the time, I remember. But it was a little underwhelming. And for me, it was kind of a letdown way to end the season. I don't know whether they had a great way to end this season. Actually, probably the best way to end this season would have been to go back and show like the horrors of war in some way, you know? Maybe even Game of Thrones is not much for montage. I don't know that they've ever done one on the show, honestly, but it could have done one here, a little quick check-in with everybody and then out, you know, but it was a little bit disappointing, but you know, just reminds me of how much of this show is like foretelling what's to come in 5 years. Like, we're still waiting for this shit, but we're happy about it. On to season three. Hey, I want to give a shout out to everybody listening to this. I am going to throw it up on Winterfell. I think I'm just going to bunch it closer. I might actually do the one I did last week on Winterfell today. I don't know. I know there's a lot of people who subscribe to both, but why not? Get it out there. There's some people who don't want to hear me yammer about Better Call Saul or good stuff like that. They just want to hear GOT, baby. That's all right. Oh, yeah. By the way, go watch Vox Lux. Do it. I did a Patreon pod about that, and if you haven't seen Vox Lux yet, go see it. Rent it, whatever. Go to your local video store, as I do. It's fantastic. This guy, Brady Corbett, is just an amazing new director. The Childhood of a Leader is also fantastic. I love these movies. Very excited. I think top movies of the year, Mandy and Vox Lux for me. Those are my one and two. I got to put Mandy at number one, though. I got to. It was crazy. I loved it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. DVRpodcast.com. Subscribe to DVR, Daily DVR. We're on Pandora. That's right. We're on Pandora. Subscribe on Pandora. Make us part of your collection. Share it. Do whatever you want. You can listen to it wherever you go. Pandora, baby. That's right, baby. Pandora. Later. Peace.